You're with Virginia on ABC Radio Melbourne.
Greg Hunt is the Federal Health Minister with some news this morning about Pfizer and younger Australians. Greg Hunt, good to talk to you. Good morning.
Good morning, Virginia.
So what's the advice that's been given to you by the TGA, by the Therapeutic Goods Administration?
So overnight, the TGA has approved the use of Pfizer for 12 to 15-year-olds. That's in line with the recommendation of the American authorities as well. There's a double green light process. The first is the TGA. The second is now what's called the Australian Technical Advisory Group on Immunisation, or ATAGI. They'll consider that and make and give advice to the government on the 12 to 15-year-old use. It's likely that they are in a position by the end of next week on their early advice to suggest that the immunocompromised or kids with underlying medical conditions could immediately be added to the what's called the Phase 1B group, so the same as other people with underlying medical conditions and given immediate access to Pfizer, and if that's the case, we'll do that. And then they'll look at the international evidence over the course of the period, most probably reaching a decision in the mid to late August period on the general population with regards to 12 to 15-year-olds. And if that's a yes, then we'll make that available through a combination of schools and general programs during the course of 2021.
So through this year, you'd actually roll that out through schools to kids?
It would be a combination of schools and also all of the other means by which people can be vaccinated, whether it's GPs, clinics, Commonwealth vaccination clinics, state clinics. So that's the plan, which is well advanced. We purchased for whole of population on the basis that if vaccines were approved, we were already ready, and we've planned, and General Fruin is well advanced on having the options for kids to have access this year.
I want to talk through a few timelines, and we've got a lot to get through. So, but just quickly, before we do get to all of that, I'm just wondering why you're making the announcement after Pfizer being approved by the TGA. There's no TGA statement that I can find. And for a key medical announcement that clearly has also been leaked to a newspaper this morning, I'm just wondering if it's more important to be straightforward and to allow the authorities themselves to make this announcement rather than run the risk of having them seen to be politicised?
With respect, wherever the TGA has made the major announcements, we've obviously spoken in terms of the media, and part of it is that to be able to communicate the program details as well. So the TGA has made the approval overnight, and my job is to help explain the program side of it to the public, exactly the questions that that you've asked. And I think that's what we've done in the past and what we'll continue to do.
Well, I'm pretty sure you can probably hear that sound in the background. That's the howls of the 20 to 40-year-olds who are desperate to get their turn at Pfizer. Does this news change their access, and can you give us an actual start date for that group?
So it doesn't change their access.
So that's still September for them?
Yeah, at this stage the expectation is September, October. If there were to be a variation,
October now?
No. General Fruin has always said September or early October. It's more likely September. And if there were to be a change, it would be to bring forwards, not push back. The reason being, we had been planning on 600,000 Pfizer a week during this period of time. We've been able to bring forward the additional doses at an earlier time. Now we've got the million Pfizer. That's I think, really important news, and that's translating to the level of vaccination, which we're now seeing of 184,000 yesterday, a million a week for the last 7 days, and people are really stepping forward when they have the opportunity to do that, and I want to thank them for that.
Well, what if ATAGI, though, when they consider this, what if they give out some advice in relation to it and then, like on AstraZeneca, they change their mind? What if they go through a series of mind changes?
Well, part of their job, and I do respect this, is to adapt to the international information that's available. They identified the thrombosis side effect about 1 million doses in Australia. I think it was 18 million doses in the UK, and the UK is now at close to 50 million AstraZeneca doses that they've delivered. But that early identification in Australia did lead to a change. It's reduced the recommended group of people for who would have access to AstraZeneca from 20 million to now 5 million, although it's available to everybody on both the TAGI and TGA advice at any age. But it's preferred and recommended for people over 60.
I just wanted to ask you quickly. You mentioned before about immunocompromised kids and kids down to 12 with underlying conditions. Would you consider doing the same for pregnant women and making Pfizer immediately available for them?
Well, again, this would always be a matter for the medical experts.
And are your expert team at TAGI, are they actively or have they actively considered that?
So they're constantly reviewing the advice. So our request is for them to, it's a standing request to do weekly continuous reviews of the medical advice.
And is the pregnancy question on the table in front of them?
Well, it is something that they are reviewing. I don't have any additional advice on
okay.
that.
Okay.
I'd rather be very, very clear on
well,
that.
Look, I guess what this news shows up, and it's terrific news for families who want to get their kids vaccinated, but here's the reality. You haven't even got your main, most crucial cohort all vaccinated yet, and that's priority 1A. And we now have infections, the thing we all feared, infections in a disability residential home in New South Wales as part of their outbreak, when they were originally supposed to be done by Easter. Minister, that's a shameful situation, isn't it?
Well, at this stage, we've had 24,500 doses in the
No, I'm asking you a specific question about a big gap in what was supposed to be your priority 1A vaccination rollout. You surely must be feeling, if not down in the mouth, then downright embarrassed about that.
Every day we're having vaccination inreaches to these homes, encouraging families to take them up, whether it's through the inreach or through access to the disability hubs, to the Commonwealth clinics, to the state clinics, to the GPs,
and it's not done. And this was your government called it the priority 1A group, and it's not done. Everyone feared an infection outbreak in these most vulnerable Australians, and now, so many months on, we have it. It's just maddening.
Well, I think one of the things we're doing here, as I say, we've achieved 100% coverage across the aged care homes. With the disability, we know that the loss of life was half of that of the average Australian last year. So this is very much about making sure that it's a group which
you can't look at the past in order to answer a question about the present. You can't talk to me about last year in order to deal with an issue, a timeline you set for yourselves. This was your own timeline. Tell me how you're going to deal with that quickly.
Well, what we do have is we have an inreach program which is delivering hundreds of inreach visits to disability homes each week. That's over 3,700 inreach visits to disability homes that have occurred already, as well as the disability hubs that are vaccinating very large numbers each day of both residents and staff, and continuing to encourage the families to take those opportunities. They're doing a great job. And as I say, so far, 24,500 vaccinations within that group. And
this is just speechifying and not actually addressing the reality in that home. You've got infected, incredibly vulnerable people in that home, and I frankly don't even hear much empathy from you about that this morning.
No, look, deeply. Can I respectfully say, every day, there's this total focus on the circumstances of individuals and the absolute concern to make sure that. We're focusing on their health and encouraging the families to take the opportunities, making sure that we're getting people in. This is the thing we live and breathe, and the passion and the concern, and that's how we've managed to save lives on a scale which is probably 30,000 below what would have occurred if we'd had the OECD average.
Yes, I hear the Prime Minister use that figure a lot. Let's get to a few other questions. Greg Hunt is with you this morning, Federal Health Minister. In next week's batch of Pfizer, a million a week coming into the country now, will 800,000 again go to New South Wales like it did this week?
No, that figure's incorrect.
How many went to New South Wales then from the 1 million minister?
So that's the per capita allocation goes to each state. In the way that
Sorry to jump in. I understand that, but I thought there was a decision taken because they're dealing with such a big outbreak to give them a bigger proportion this time around just to help them out. Did that not happen?
No, that was a statement that was made, and I think that was based one of the premiers misunderstood where the doses were arriving in country as opposed to what was being distributed. So each state and territory receives a per capita allocation through their GPs and through their state clinics.
Okay,
so
and those proportions won't change at the moment?
No, and for New South Wales, that in the same way that Victoria received a one-off allocation of 150,000 additional, New South Wales received that one-off allocation of 150,000. But, for example, next week, we are expecting that the states and territories will have over 400,000, the GPs will have over 340,000, the Commonwealth clinics will have significant numbers, and then when you add in the AstraZeneca, that will take it to a very significant number, and all of the states and territories receive their proportion. New South Wales had the same arrangement as Victoria of an extra 150,000 from
to deal with their outbreak. Okay. Are you able to, in a straightforward way, just take us through the timeline now of which age groups can expect what and dealing with specific dates? So you mentioned that the immunocompromised, if TAGI approves, children with relation to Pfizer might be able to get access to it right now, as do your priority 1B group right now. But when it comes to the other age groups, what are the dates?
So the guidance that we've given is that the under 40s would most likely commence in September or early October. If that were to change, it would come forwards because we've been able to secure the earlier supplies of the Pfizer. That guidance hasn't changed, and that remains the advice which the COVID Shield team has provided to the National Cabinet, which we've shared with
And the next age group?
Now, as part of that, the question which is being determined is whether you would move in a 10-year age group or whether you would move to all of the people under 40, and so that's a decision that's still to be taken based on the supplies and the advice.
But so we still don't have a start date for under 40.
We've set a general period, which is similar to what's occurred in other countries, where you give that forward guidance. And I'm giving an honest explanation that it's a window, not a specific day at this stage. And then as we come on the basis of the rollout of the vaccination program, as we're seeing people come forward, that's giving us the chance to not only secure those dates, but to look at whether there are any earlier opportunities. And there'll be clear guidance in advance. We were able, for example, to bring forward the over 50s to an earlier date than had been expected. And what that's doing is now approximately just over a million doses a week being administered, and each person who comes forward now also gives others who are due later the capacity to come forward earlier.
Just before I let you go, and I know you have to go, final question today is, and we've been talking a lot about ATAGI this morning and their key role in technically advising the federal government. If ATAGI is your independent scientific advisor on who should safely get what vaccines, in what circumstances is it ever justified that a politician, such as the Prime Minister, try and pressure them to change their minds on who should be getting what vaccine safely, as the Prime Minister says he is doing in relation to AstraZeneca? How is that justified if we're to have faith in the system?
Well, firstly, we have followed their advice and followed it scrupulously.
Sure, but the Prime Minister said yesterday that he's making a constant appeal, he says, that's his phrase, a constant appeal to constantly reconsider their advice. Now, he's a politician. They're the technical advisors.
Our job is to ensure that we are seeking continuous review, exactly the thing that you just asked for. You asked for ATAGI yourself to review the position on pregnancy. Literally, you've done exactly the same thing.
Once they make up their mind, I won't be trying to pressure them to change it.
Well,
that's what the Prime Minister's doing.
but they actually have a position which you were just seeking to change.
They haven't announced a position on Pfizer?
No, no, in relation to pregnancy.
But Pfizer, so, but pregnant women getting Pfizer?
Yeah. So
no, that's a different thing I was asking, what their position is about pregnant women
similar,
and Pfizer.
But that's okay. I think the point is this. We're committed to following the medical advice, and we have followed it. And that's made some difficult decisions, reducing the number of people who are recommended for access to AstraZeneca from the whole of population, 20 million, to now the over 60s, but with the capacity for anybody under 60 to seek informed consent, where that's a group of over 60s of just over 5 million. The second thing, though, is our job is to ask them to continuously review the medical advice, and that allows them to take on board the international evidence. It meant that we were able to identify the thrombosis side effect, a million doses in Australia rather than about 18 million doses in the UK. They made the decision, or they gave the advice to change, and we followed it. Difficult advice. It did have an impact on the program, but it was the right advice and it was the right thing to adopt it and follow it. And that's what we'll continue to do. But just as you've raised the question of pregnancy, it's our role and our task to ask the questions about continuous review.
I'm hardly the Prime Minister, Greg Hunt, but hey, thanks for the comparison.
That's all right.
Good to talk to you this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Take care, everybody. And thanks for coming forward to vaccination, and please keep doing so.
Greg Hunt, Federal Health Minister. On that, he and I can agree. Please keep coming forward to vaccination. It has been analysed, it's approved, and it's safe, and it really is our only way out of this.